You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show, the number one choice of listeners who were not aware they had a choice. And this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you so much.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It's a Monday. Oh my God, can you believe that? Whoa, what are we going to do now? Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. My name is in the title of the show, therefore, I must be him. I don't know what state you live in. State of denial, perhaps? I think a lot of us do. But today, for five states in this great country of ours, it's Patriots Day. What that means, I don't know. It's not a federal holiday. Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, 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 no. There's mail today. The post office is open. Banks are open. The only thing that is closed today in five states would be state and municipal offices and also schools. But schools, they seem to be closed every day, so what's the big deal? In Wisconsin, Massachusetts, Maine, Connecticut, and one other state I can't remember, it's Patriots Day, and it's a state holiday. Otherwise, this is not significant, and well, it is, but not really. Oh, everything still sucks. There are still wars going on. All that kind of stuff. Trump is still being indicted for everything that he does, because he does everything wrong. So that's all the same. But for five states, it's Patriots Day. I'm going to talk about that today, whether you like it or not. And you may not like it, but please listen anyway. I'm going to say things during this show that you will not appreciate. I'm quite certain you won't appreciate this, but I'm going to do it anyway. That's enough music. And later on in the show, I have an extremely interesting special guest, two ladies who are just adorably wonderful. And they've written a book that talks about a very scary time in our recent history. And they bring it to light in the form of a children's book, which is very, very odd and very, very different. And you'll hear about that on today's show. You won't want to miss that. I'm telling you, therefore, it is true. Now, let's get started. It's Patriots Day for five states. I live in Massachusetts. I'm not gloating. I'm just telling you that's where my abode happens to be. And it's Patriots Day, and it's another one of those things where I'm sick of the subject. You know, we just, as I said, with that eclipse thing, we just overdo everything. Same with Patriots Day, especially in Massachusetts, where they run the Boston Marathon. Now, there's a history of some horrible thing happening, not too long ago in our decades. But this is, I don't understand running. I just never understood running. And I know some people are saying, Ron, now we're not on the same page. We're on different books sometimes. I don't understand running. I just don't get it. I understand walking and walking fast. The only reason one should need to run is if they're being chased by something or someone. Then you got to run your ass off. Other than that, there's no reason to do that. Oh, Ron, there is a reason. It's quite an achievement. Is an achievement to running? You know, they say that running gives you a natural high. No, running makes you short of breath, less oxygen in your system, and you get dizzy and you feel faint, and that's your high. That's not high. That's your body saying, oh, crap, I'm going to die. If you find that to be a high, I guess it's the same feeling at first, but then you die. So that's not great. And who's chasing you? Who's chasing you that you need to run so fast? Oh, it's just competitive. Competitive to what? I don't understand. Now, what I do understand is Olympic running, because then you're being called the fastest man or woman in the Olympics, or actually they say on Earth, which is really stupid because they haven't checked with everybody yet. But I get the Olympic things like the 50-yard dash and the 100-yard dash and the dash for love and all that kind of, you know, I don't know, the relay race. Here, take a baton and while you're running. Oh, okay. That kind of thing I understand, because you're competing against maybe three or maybe six other people to see who wins the race. That's, I wouldn't do it. I certainly wouldn't do it. I'm not going to knock myself out to run faster than somebody else, but if that's your thing, go for it. But at least there's like something going on here. Marathon running? Stop it. It's just, what's the point of this? You're running with thousands of other people. You're not going to come in first. You're not going to come in second. You're not going to come in third. You're going to come in 5,000th and 27th. What are you doing this for? Ron, because it's an achievement to run a marathon. Oh, how about achieving something like important in your life, like a success or getting a good job or doing some type of craft successfully? How about that? Ron, it's the achievement of running in a marathon, so I can tell other people I ran in a marathon. Oh, you could tell them that anyway. They can't check it out. I could say it. Hi, my name is Ron. How are you, Ron? Fine. I ran in a marathon. Oh, okay. I mean, what are they going to do? Say, no, you didn't. Well, actually, if they look at me, they probably would say, no, you didn't. I guess it's different in my case. But come on, man. Come on. What is the point of this? Well, I run to collect money to help save the children. You run to save children? Yeah, people bet money on me. They give me money to run. I'll give you money to run and don't come back. How about that idea? I'll give you money to shut up. You don't need to run in a marathon for that. Here's an idea. You run and keep running, and I never want to see you again. Here's $2. Bye. Okay, that I understand. But this marathon stuff is crazy. And it doesn't stop there. Not only is it in my viewpoint, which is not yours, quite obviously, because I know I'm in the minority on this one. Not only is it a little weird to run so far, it is 26 miles in the Boston Marathon. What are you kidding me? I ran 26 miles. How long did it take you to run it? 3 days. Then I took a cab. You know, what happens if you run the marathon? You run like maybe 6 miles, if you can even do that. And then you go, I can't take another step. Oh, now I'm in a town I don't know. I don't know where I am. And my car is 6 miles away. What do I do now? And I don't have my wallet on me. I've never seen a marathon runner with a wallet or a pocketbook. But what do? Well, I mean, what do if you don't do it all the way? I'll just take a cab back to my car. You can't take a cab. You don't have any money on you. I'll shove a $100 bill in my shoe. No, you won't. You won't mess with your shoes. What are you talking about? What are you, crazy? It's just nuts. But here's the crazier thing than running in a marathon. It's standing in the street along the marathon route near the curb on the sidewalk, watching people run by. That's weird. Did you run the marathon? No, but I stood there and watched it go by. Oh, whoa, you're good. What? And then some of them hand people water. You know, that's very trusting. That's very trusting. You think everybody along that marathon route is a trusting person? I've put a little bit of fentanyl. I've put some drugs in the water. I've put some acid in the water. Wait till they take a drink, they'll die. I mean, I know that sounds horrible, but how do I know what's in that water that someone's handing me as I'm running? At my most vulnerable time in my life. It's also very interesting to watch the television coverage when the runners get to the finish line and they collapse. Yes, I achieved the marathon. And what was it like to run it? I don't know. When I got to the end of it, I collapsed and nearly died. Oh, God. And what if you have to pee? How can you run a marathon if you're over 50 years old? What if you have to pee? I guess you just pee you don't pee your pants because you're not even wearing pants. You pee your shorts. And it's not like nobody's going to not see you. Is that man actually... Is that pee running down his leg as he's running down the street? Yes, it is. Yes, it is, John. Yes, it is, John. I don't know how. I just can't. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I think after running about half a mile of the marathon, you have to say to yourself at one point, "The hell's wrong with me? What the hell am I doing?" Some people actually travel the country and the world in order to run in a marathon. I know somebody whose son is running in the Tokyo Marathon, and they went to see their child run in the Tokyo Marathon in Tokyo, which is where they hold the Tokyo Marathon. Why? Why? Yeah, I'm going to go watch my son run. All right. Hey, well, if you're not doing anything like next Tuesday, you want to come over to my house and watch me tie my shoes? It's about as interesting. Oh, man. See, obviously, I don't get it. There's something that I'm missing from the equation that makes me not appreciate this marathon thing. And then there's people in wheelchairs who run the marathon. Actually, they roll the marathon? I don't know. And I'm not being insensitive. I'm just being honest about it. Now they have the achievement of, I did the marathon in a wheelchair. Okay. Now what do I say to these people? Why? You don't have to. Hey, you don't have to run the marathon. You're in a wheelchair. You don't have to do the marathon if you don't want to. Did you know that? Yeah, they're sponsoring me to run. Oh, they're sponsoring you. I see. You'll do anything for that, huh? They'll sponsor you to run. All right, you'll do just about anything, won't you? No, I believe in the cause. Why don't you do something other than run for the cause? Why don't you dump a bucket of ice on your head? That's the same thing. I'll give you $100 to dump water, a cold water on your head. Okay. I mean, that's a little easier than running 26 miles. It's an achievement, Ron. Don't you understand? It's the most beautiful thing in the world. No, the most beautiful thing in the world is a nymphomaniac woman who's quite attractive. Ron, you just don't get it. Oh, no, I don't get it. Oh, no, I don't. All right. Well, thank you for putting up with me because obviously you disagree with me. I know everybody says, Ron, what's wrong with you? Running a marathon is quite an achievement. What's the matter with you? Well, all right. We're not seeing eye to eye, are we? Apparently not. Do you want to come work for me by any chance? I got job openings right here at New England Broadcasting. Yeah, seriously. How about this?
Are you looking for a career in the fast-paced world of radio and podcasting? Good news, New England Broadcasting is now hiring. That's right, you could have a chance to work with 30-year broadcasting icon Ron Van Dam on his Daily Show and all the other fine programs on New England Broadcasting. Immerse yourself in the nonstop action of a broadcasting career where every day you'll be responsible for things like warming up Ron's coffee, getting more coffee, cleaning unspeakable schmutz off microphones, semi-regular toenail and ear hair trimming, checking the dryer to see if Ron's underpants are toasty warm, helping Ron into his toasty warm underpants, telling Ron he sounds good, checking to see if Shanahan is sober enough to do some bits, reassuring Ron that you're not lying, he does sound good, unclogging the studio toilet, yes, every day, fending off Ron's fan, intermittent waxing, and taking calls from Ron's exciting guests, from that lady who wrote a book on diseases only frogs get, to the D-list celebrity who's thrilled to be the official spokesperson for the American Nasal Impaction Society. You might be wondering if you're right for the job. Qualifications include an unironic interest in radio, knowing who Ron is in the first place, a tolerance for supernatural levels of flatulence, and at least 1 year of experience in dealing with grumpy old people who talk to themselves. If that sounds like you, your future is waiting at New England Broadcasting.
Hey, wait a minute. That was a little insulting. All right, let's talk to our guests. Dr. Andrea Ballas joins us now, and Elizabeth Levy. They are both the writers and authors of a very interesting book called Witch Hunt. And it's about a time in our history that perhaps a lot of people don't really know about because they weren't around, but it was pretty awesome. Not that I was here, but you know, whatever. This is the McCarthy era, and what a weird time. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, there was a time in our history that things were quite unsettled. Actually, there are many times in our history when things are quite unsettled. We think it's unsettled now, and it is. But there was a period in history when things were really weird, wasn't it?
They certainly were, and a lot of them are, in fact, continuing into our time. But We're founded on the basis that you're supposed to be able to say what you think, if that was what the revolution was about.
Right.
And somehow it became dangerous to say what you think, and people who didn't agree with what you thought made it dangerous, and that was something that concerned us.
It was almost like a government mafia, in a sense, where people were intimidated, scared, threatened, and paid consequences.
It's true. I had been writing children's books for a long time, and I could remember when an uncle, sort of the secrets in the family, when my family had to buy a farm for an uncle who had been in the State Department. So I think that Andre and I look for stories that we could tell kids that history is always going on, that you're living through it. And I think that's the main reason, the drama of this period. And it touches all of us. I mean, even if you are not the worst person who gets hauled in front of the committee, whoever the committee may be, your relatives are your children, your neighbors, your friends, the people in your school, PTA, they're all affected. They're all a kind of collateral damage. We think that the damage is the person who gets hauled before the committee, but there are all those other people.
absolutely. Let's talk about that, because there are people listening to this that don't know what you're talking about. Let's talk about that time in history. It was called the Red Scare, Joe McCarthy, etc. What happened in those years?
Well, at the beginning, it was fear of communism. One of our favorites was that they didn't want kids to read about Robin Hood because he stole from the rich and gave to the poor, and yeah. They thought it was the communist line.
Wow.
So the fear really was that communism, which was true, had taken over most of Eastern Europe, and that it was a fight between them, and that we had people here in the United States, many of whom who grew up in the Depression and were looking for a fairer society, had gotten caught up in being communist or going to a party where communists were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's more often what happened, is people went for the free beer mm-hmm. and found themselves 20 years later hauled in front of a committee because they had gone yeah. to a meeting. But it's also, this took place in the world of the Cold War, where people saw the world in two shades. There was them and there was us.
Yeah.
And there was the communists, and then there was the democracy or the anti-communists.
Right.
And you were going to be put into one category and the other, no matter what precisely you said, thought, or did.
Yeah, boy, everything you're saying is ringing so true today, not directly with those causes, but certainly those effects. You had to be careful who you even talked to, because they consider that to be an association of some sort. So it was like paranoia on steroids. It was a weird time, but I think we're doing that again to some extent. The biggest curiosity I had with the book was it's a children's book, and there are illustrations and such, and one would think, wow, this subject matter, how does that relate into a children's book?
Children really know that they're living through times. I think children know so much more than adults think they
yeah,
do. And they're affected by it. And my favorite was Sendak saying, as a child, I knew everything. I just couldn't tell the adults I knew.
Wow.
And we loved talking to people who could remember what it was like when they were a child and their parents had lost their jobs and the fear that they lived through.
Yeah.
We send children out to memorize what Thomas Jefferson says about the importance of freedom and protest and democracy, and then we deny the same rights to other people. It is something that, this is what history gives us, is a comparison, to a reminder of what once we said and what once we believed.
Yeah. You both have a great history in writing, both for theater and novels and all kinds of facets of communication, written communication. In your own rights, very popular and very very known. What made you decide to collaborate on this?
We find it fun. I mean, I know that you've had a career with a lot of fun in it,
yeah.
and we really, you may not make much money, but it really is fun to work together and find a story. I think we are storytellers, but I think we really, that makes it sound trivial, and we fight and work, but it is because it's fun to collaborate and work with someone else.
And if we find something mm-hmm. that delights, that we're pretty sure it's going to delight the other person,
mm-hmm.
then we're pretty sure it'll delight the reader too, and we have the fun of springing these brilliant ideas yeah. at one another.
And we love learning that Joseph McCarthy, who really led the movement against the Red Scare,
yeah.
but he also drank a lot, and he used to think that if he ate a stick of butter, it would coat his stomach. So reporters found him eating a stick of butter every day. I think kids will love learning that. We don't advise it for them to do it, but nonetheless, it was a fun thing.
A little
and
fun
it
fact.
Sure makes a great illustration.
I can imagine it does. And you know, you've just described how there's humor in everything. And in this book, that's certainly the case as well.
history is gossip about dead people. That's really what it is.
That's funny.
And I did love one of the people we interviewed, his parents, his mother was one of the first people in television and candid camera, you know, in behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But they knew they were going to lose their job to the blacklist because they had joined communist causes without even being communists. They bought a farm and they were farming chickens. And the FBI came, and their son, who was about 10, was scared. And he said, "Oh, don't worry. The FBI likes headlines. Communist chickens don't make headlines."
Well, some do.
Yeah, so he's the exception. When we talk about a children's book such as this, what are the actual age parameters in your mind?
Honestly, I wish we had them, but I think we're stuck back there. I mean, yeah. I know the publishers put it, it's for about from 12 to 16, 10 to 16, but we just seem to find that level naturally.
Okay.
And we work really hard. One of the things you do when you write for kids is you work really hard to make it comprehensible.
Yeah.
And adults often find that handy too. So many adults who've read the book and said, "I learned so much."
Yeah. I always think the children's books are really for adults who don't admit that they love children's books.
Yeah.
And I there's no question about it. Also, I know a lot of adults that don't understand anything beyond a children's book, but that's besides the point. You both interviewed a lot of people. I mean, the research was your own knowledge, but I understand you talked to some people who experienced this and got some different viewpoints and some new insights.
It was, besides the chicken person, we interviewed Roy Cohn, who was Joe McCarthy's main figure in this, henchman in this.
Oh.
And we interviewed his nephew, who remembered being a little scared of him because his tongue would go in and out like a snake.
Oh.
And that made Roy Cohn, I think, come alive for the kids who were reading it.
Yeah.
Kids see things in their own, sometimes peculiar, but sometimes dead-on way. And so getting the conversation, talking to people who had been children during the Red Scare made you realize that children were affected,
mm-hmm.
that even though we thought they didn't hear a word, didn't understand, when they were told to go crouch under their desks and put their hands over their necks to protect them from an atom bomb, they suspected something was going on.
Perhaps,
So that's a good point. It's fair to tell them what's going on.
That's a very interesting analogy. That makes your point better than anything else, really, because children did know what was going on. They surmised it upon, they didn't even talk to each other about it. They just surmised it upon themselves. They were a little bit more intelligent than I thought they were. Okay.
A lot,
okay. So when is the play or the movie?
As soon as we sell the rights, because Hollywood and figure out who plays us, we're ready.
I remember it's already been on television. I'm actually old enough to remember, and I never saw my parents watch television in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
And the McCarthy Army hearings were like, "I Love Lucy." Basically, millions, it was the first time that everybody was glued to their television.
Wow. Yeah, and that was big, yeah.
And I forgot that the Army-McCarthy hearings really were about Roy Cohn had tried to get special treatment for his best friend in the Army, and people didn't like if their guy had to go into the Army.
Yeah.
And so they decided, it's the pettiness of politics also getting played out in colorful ways.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy that Cohen was trying to protect and his other best friend went romping through Europe on an inspection tour of libraries where they just sort of chased each other through hotel lobby swatting at each other with rolled up newspapers.
Whoa.
I mean, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, my God. All right. But not far from where we are now either.
Yeah. Alas.
Alas and alack. All right. The book is called Witch Hunt. I know that one of the ex-presidents uses that term frequently. So even there again, whoa, okay.
But we had that title as our working title long
before. Sure.
You got there first.
You should sue him. You got to sue him.
We should. But we want to remind kids, witch hunts usually are hunting powerless people.
That's true. That's very, very true. Yeah.
And this is...
That's true.
Very touching was how proud some of the people we interviewed were of their families.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And of a political tradition that's not the normal proud American political tradition we hear about, but genuinely was a political awareness being handed from generation to generation with judgment, with thinking about it, with understanding what all of it meant.
Right.
And we know you're in New England and we'll let you go, but there was a second grade teacher in New England who lost her job, even though she had long left the Communist Party and really was proud of teaching her kids the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
Then when she went to get a job working at the SPCA cleaning out dog kennels, the FBI came and hounded her there and told her boss that she should be fired because she had once been a communist in her 20s.
Wow.
This is the one that breaks my children's heart, who are fully grown, I might add.
Yeah.
But when they see, there is an illustration in the book of the poignancy of this woman who wasn't even allowed to sweep up shit.
Wow. Well, by the way, the book is illustrated by Tim Foley. Props to him.
Wonderful.
If the book is half as fascinating as the two of you are, then you got a deal.
Thank you so much, Ron.
It's called The Witch Hunt, The Cold War, Joe McCarthy and the Red Scare. And it's approachable, and yet you'll learn something and have a good time as well. Thank you to the both of you so much. It's been a very big pleasure for me. Well, that'll do it for me today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. Thank you for your tolerance. Until tomorrow, I wish you peace.